What is up, everyone? Thank you for tuning in. And this is now Sava FC. And you're here with Antonio and...
This is Anthony. How's everybody doing?
So, after our break, we decided we're going to rebrand and stick to what we know best. And that is talking about...
soccer.
We're basically going to be covering all the biggest matches, all the biggest leagues, transfers, anything else. And you can come get your information from us here at Sava FC, a soccer podcast. Before we begin, if you could... just give us a like and leave us a comment on whatever platform you're listening to us on. We'd really appreciate it, and it would help us out.
First 100 comments, we'll read off a comment each week.
We'll read off a comment each week and respond to you guys and, you know, talk about your thoughts, what you thought about certain games, events, or anything like that. Or if you have any questions, ask us and we'll answer them to the best of our abilities. But for today, we're going to talk about the game that just took place on July 6th, 2021. Between Italy and Spain.
I don't even have fingernails left.
Oh, mine were gone before the game. That's how nervous I was. But what an exciting match it was. Anthony, why don't we talk a little bit about the road both teams took to get to today's semifinal match.
Let's do it.
Italy was in Group A. They were in Group A, and they started their first match against Turkey.
Correct.
Which they ended up winning that match 3-0.
That's right.
Impressive showing from the Azzurri, okay? They came out, first game of the tournament, they set the tone. They showed people who Italy was going to be throughout this tournament.
Well, not only did they set the tone to everybody watching, I had an expectation coming in, you know, being a fan and watching these guys play. As far back as I can remember, my first Italian national game I've watched was in 1990. All the way leading up to this. And the style of play is completely different. I've never seen anything like it, and I love it.
We're no longer watching Italy put 11 men behind a ball and defend and hoping to get those one or two counterattacks a game to score a goal. This Italy is going out and taking advantage of every opportunity they get.
That's right.
But not only are they taking advantage of every opportunity, they're creating the opportunities. That's the main difference.
Exactly.
I love watching them play. Honestly, we're biased, but my favorite team of the tournament so far.
Oh, absolutely.
Hands down.
I've told you before, if Italy lost, I wanted to see Denmark win the whole thing.
Very true. I mean, what Denmark has been doing...
Cinderella story.
But even think about... so, Italy, we've always talked about how they're a team that's succeeding because they're playing together. They are like a family, okay?
Yeah, they are. Absolutely.
Denmark, ever since what happened to Eriksson... has come together so strong, and they've battled every team that they've played. That's the reason they're in the semifinals tomorrow against England.
100%.
I mean, I hope Denmark makes it to the final. I would love to see that Cinderella story, but we'll have to wait until tomorrow to see.
That's right. You've heard the saying, comeback story everybody's been wanting to see. It's not a comeback story, but it's definitely a story everybody wants to see.
Oh, absolutely. Back to Italy. Then the second game Italy had to play in the group stage was against Switzerland. They also won that game 3-0.
Yep.
And Switzerland wasn't an easy team.
No, they're good. They're a good team. They've got some top-notch players there.
And not only that, they also knocked France out of the Euros, the favorites to win the whole thing. And Switzerland, not only did they knock out France, they also ended up in the next round taking Spain, which we'll talk about in a little bit. They ended up taking Spain to penalty kicks as well.
Yeah, they took them to the limit.
Huge tournament for their goalkeeper, Sommer.
He had a hell of a tournament. I mean, I think the stats were four saves per game. He had the most saves per game than anybody else.
He's phenomenal. We were joking the other day, me and a couple buddies of mine. We were saying it's Hot Boy Sommer. That, I mean, the guy, I remember watching him against France and then watching him against Spain. And it's just phenomenal. He really played his heart out. They got unlucky on the PKs, but... you know, Spain was the better team there.
Listen, let's be honest. PKs are a 50-50 shot unless you have...
correct.
...top-notch goalkeeper that you know is going to stop every shot.
The goalkeeper, it's the job of the forward to score it, not the job of the keeper to save it.
Right.
That's the way I've always approached penalties.
There's more pressure, I believe, on the goalkeeper than there is on the guy shooting the ball.
That I don't know. Like I said...
for me, as a player...
it's on the guy shooting the ball, man.
I never felt that pressure. I knew that it was going to go in the back of the net. I felt like the keeper needed to make the right judgment call. You know, if he makes the wrong dive...
but that's why the pressure is on the goal scorer. Because if the keeper saves it, you knew that you should have scored that.
Well, right, but maybe I just had a different mentality on it.
Possibly. I'm sure these pros would beg to differ. Anyway, Italy played Switzerland, beat them 3-0. They move on to Wales. They played Wales with making 8 changes in the lineup, and Wales was a good team. They came out of that group second, okay? Obviously, yeah. They still got Gareth Bale on that team, yeah. Dangerous. They win 1-0. 18-year-old scored. Who was it that scored for Italy that game?
It was Pessina.
Pessina, right. Isn't he like 18 or something like that? One of the youngest players that we have?
He's got to be.
It just shows you that these guys...
No, he's 24.
Pessina's 24. Wow, okay. It's confusing him with someone else then. Listen, just goes to show you though, that these guys are willing to do it any way that they possibly can. Even by making 8 changes in that lineup, they were able to win the game 1-0 against Wales. Right.
You know, I like Pessina, but he's got resting bee face. Always.
Listen, in that game, he was at the right place at the right time when he scored that. Moving on. Italy gets out of the group.
Yep.
They end up going against Austria. Okay? That, for me, before going into the game, I was nervous. Because I said, it's always these little teams. Not that Austria is a bad team.
They're not a bad team, but they don't have anybody that plays on a major team in Europe.
But what they do have, they play that style of soccer where they're okay with sitting behind the ball and they rough you around. They're not afraid right. to be physical.
They're waiting for you to make a mistake.
Right. And Italy struggles sometimes against those types of teams. The physical teams that right. there's no certain style of play that you can prepare for.
Right. And the problem with that too, Italy struggles. Not only they struggle with that, but they also have a bad rap for the blatant, you know, flopping. So if they do get hit for real, the referee might let it go because they think the guy's flopping.
Which has happened to us every once in a while. I mean, listen, yeah. Prime example, we have Immobile, who in the game against Belgium, literally game. Laying on the ground, rolling around crying, and then Barella scores, and he's jumping up and down celebrating.
Flips, right.
Like, they were making fun of him on Reddit.
Yeah.
There's a point where that's got to stop.
It's got to.
But either way, Austria was a good game. They proved to be a good test. And one thing happened in that game that I was very happy about, they scored on Italy, which to me was what Italy needed as a wake-up call to let them know exactly. that, hey, the bigger teams can do this to you too.
I said it to you. I said it to my uncle, who got really upset when I said this. But I truly believe that Italy had a little help from Lady Luck in that game. Because Austria could have won. They could have won.
100%. 100%. It was that goal that they scored that ended up getting called offsides.
Yes.
If that had counted, Italy was in trouble.
Right.
Italy
it was a momentum swinger.
Absolutely. That we only won that game because it went into overtime. If Austria had found a way to close that out in regular time, that's it. We weren't coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
Austria tired out, and that's what allowed us to put 2 on them.
Right.
So then after Austria, we go to Belgium.
Which I was extremely nervous about. Belgium's got 5 of the best players in the world on that team.
They have De Bruyne, Lukaku. They have Hazard, but Hazard was hurt.
A little out of shape, too.
Yeah, his move to Real Madrid wasn't of the greatest for him. Listen, Hazard is a world-class talent.
He is. He's unbelievable.
But then his brother, Thorgan Hazard, was on the team. And just the game before, he had that beautiful goal that actually sent him into the next round. So he was a problem to be dealing with. Belgium, see, here's the thing about Belgium. They have these great players, okay? Mm-hmm. But they're ranked 1 in the world by FIFA. I don't understand how.
I think it's because of what I said before about how they have this.
But it doesn't matter.
They're beating this team. They're beating that team.
They've never won a thing.
Well, they haven't won any championships. But, you know, they rank them by their friendlies and they rank them by,
It's crazy, though. It is. How do you rank a team 1 who hasn't won anything?
I don't know.
Like, you know, at least you got a Spain, a Germany, a France, a Portugal. They've all won something recently.
Exactly.
These guys haven't won anything, and you rank them 1?
Portugal won the Euros 2 years ago.
Four years ago, I'm sorry. Correct.
So they shouldn't be in first. They should probably be in second, right, for the Euros.
I mean, we're talking about worldwide rankings. So Portugal won them. I could understand. I don't know exactly where they are right now.
They're 8th because Italy's ranked 7.
Correct. I did know that. So Portugal 8th behind Italy. First of all, I just don't agree with them being 7 and 8. But either way, France just won the last World Cup.
Right.
France has the best footballers in the world right now. How are they not ranked 1 over Belgium? That's what blows my mind.
Yeah, it drives me crazy. I think it has a lot to do with some politics, maybe.
Hey, who knows? The World Cup is in Qatar next year, right?
Yeah, that's a big... We'll get into that one in the future.
But I digress. What were we talking about?
Belgium.
The Belgian
game. Scared me because, you know, they're a strong team. We're talking about the Hazard brothers. Talking about
Hazard didn't play, though. Eden Hazard didn't play.
Right, right.
Which helped us a little bit. I wasn't afraid of Belgium, though. I wasn't afraid. I felt like the way our midfield plays, we could have controlled the game. Lukaku, historically, had never scored against the duo of Chiellini and Bonucci in the four games he played against them in Serie A. So it's not a long history, but still, it's there. He's never scored against them. I wasn't too worried. The one thing that was scary about that game was the PK that was given up. Because once we went up 2-0 against Belgium, Italy was playing great. We went up at 2-0. There goes my bias, we. As you can tell, we're Italy fans, but we'll try to keep it neutral for the rest of the teams that we talk about. So Italy goes up 2-0. They give a PK to Lukaku right before the halftime. That was a game changer.
Sure was.
Because now pressure's on to make sure that they don't score another one.
Right.
I am happy in a sense, though. I've grown up my whole life with my soccer coach telling me 2-0 is the most dangerous lead to go in with at halftime.
Absolutely.
Because you go in, you feel confident that you're up, you come out playing
flat.
Right. A more lax type of football. That was good in a way because it forced them to stay on their toes knowing that at any second the tides could turn.
Now, this game in particular, and I've told you this, I've told this to many people, this by far, I'm going to be 42 in November, this game by far was my favorite game I watched Italy play.
Italy-Belgium, yep.
They forced Belgium to make so many mistakes in the first 20 minutes of the game, more mistakes in the first 20 minutes of the game than Belgium made
All tournament.
Or maybe all year long. The way they came out firing on all, I mean, it was just like nonstop. Almost like you had 11 roadrunners out there.
Absolutely.
It was just unbelievable.
But that's the beauty of Italy's possession style of soccer that they're currently playing.
It was one touch pass. One touch pass.
Yep.
And it wasn't, these passes were so precise and so surgically on point. It was just impressive to watch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, hey, they deserved that win, though, wholeheartedly. And that's how they got to today's game in the semifinal.
Right.
To end off their run up until the semifinal, they ended up having 11 goals for, 2 against, and they were on a 32-game winning streak.
Yeah.
Okay?
32-game winning streak.
That's
and
how impressive
Italy
is. Hold
on a second. Belgium isn't ranked number one?
Belgium was ranked number one in the
how
world.
Many winning? How many? What's their winning streak?
I don't think they had one.
Okay.
They might have had a couple of games coming into the tournament, right?
Maybe, but 32 games in a row. Do you know how hard it is to win 3 games in a row? 4 games in a row?
Listen.
32 games in a row.
I'll tell you what. I don't care how big Belgium's winning streak was. It doesn't exist anymore. So.
Right.
That's all I got to say about that.
Win or lose, I still think they should make a big statue of Mancini right in Rome. And put it right in front of the Colosseum.
Unfortunately, history only remembers the winners.
That's true.
So let's see what happens down the road. But that was Italy's road to the semifinal. Then we have Spain's road to the semifinal. And Spain was in what? Group E?
They had some really tough opponents. They had Sweden. They had Slovakia. They had Poland.
So for starters, people underestimated Spain this tournament.
Absolutely.
Spain has a younger team than usual, but it's also a group that's been playing together in the, what was it, the U21 brackets for a while. Yeah. These guys have been playing together for a while. And it helps when you have this youth getting this type of experience in a major tournament.
Not only that, their bench is full of knowledge.
Yes.
And they have that to help them out.
Well, you got to figure, they have Busquets and Koke on the field, which are like basically the only veterans. I think the rest of their lineup is all 25 and under. Koke's 29, Busquets is 32. And then like they have Alcantara coming off the bench at 30 years old. Even Morata, one of their top strikers, he's only 27, which, you know, you could argue he's over 25. He's one of the veterans, but it's 27, still young.
I feel bad for that kid.
Yeah, we'll get into that afterwards. But, you know, this Spain team is no joke.
No, they're good. I could see them doing really well in the World Cup as well if they can keep the same group. Maybe add a guy here or there.
I believe so. Here's the difference, though. This Spain team had one thing over every other team that I noticed, at least from the games that I watched. Their endurance, man.
Oh, yeah. They can go.
These Spaniards could run all day.
Yeah, they can go.
It was unbelievable to watch them play. And Spain, up until today's game, had to play into two overtimes. We'll get into that in a second. But they had to play two overtimes before getting to the semifinal.
That's an extra 60 minutes
of soccer
on top of the 180 that they were already supposed to play.
Yep.
Now, everyone is going to say, oh, well, they're professionals. They're supposed to. Now, well, listen. I want to see somebody go out there as, let's say, as a center attacking midfielder who's going to run an average of 8 miles a game.
Right.
At full out sprint. You know what I mean? And at some points, they're jogging back or walking back. But 8 miles, and now you got to put in another 30 minutes?
I'm sure there's even more. There's certain midfield players that run even more than that.
Sure.
I mean, the way that Spain plays, you know, kind of similar to Italy, but you always see their team move as a unit. So they don't really keep anybody staggered up too much. That team is floating around up and down the field together. So all those players do a lot of running throughout the course of a game. But Spain's road, so they started off with Sweden. Tied that game 0-0. Then they end up playing Poland. They tied that game 1-1. So now this is where you start to think, all right, Spain's not making it out of this group this year. They go and play Slovakia. Everything changes. They beat Slovakia 5-0. Okay?
Yep. You know, it's tough, too, because, you know, they tied Poland. They tied Sweden. They're playing at home. You would think that they would have that home field advantage.
Right.
And they just had that bad luck for those first two games.
But it was also coming into this major tournament, like we were talking about, with a predominantly younger team.
But they also played Sweden. They're good.
And let's not forget, Poland. Sweden is the reason Italy didn't make the World Cup in 2018.
And Poland has, who does Poland have?
They have Lewandowski, yep.
He's unbelievable.
And let's not forget, one of my personal favorites on that team as well is Zielinski.
Oh, yes.
Zielinski is a monster in the midfield. Yeah. So Poland's got a good squad.
Yeah.
And then even Slovakia. Slovakia's not that bad, but Spain took it to them and beat them 5-0. In the next round, Spain ended up playing
Croatia. Which I honestly thought Croatia was going to win this game because they have a good team.
Croatia was also very impressive this tournament. And as we saw, Croatia ended up taking them into overtime. So they ended up taking Croatia into overtime. They ended up beating them, I believe, what was it, 5-3?
5-3, yep.
Yeah, so they ended up beating them 5-3. Then they go into the next game, as we were talking about earlier, Switzerland. Okay? Hell of a team. Switzerland, another group, played together. Goalie did phenomenal. Switzerland also ends up taking them into overtime. Not only did Switzerland take them into overtime, but they also took them into penalty kicks.
Shots, yep.
And this is what I was talking about before. Spain's endurance is the reason they did so well.
Right.
The fact that they could keep running and defending and running, it's just, that's one of the benefits of having a young team, the conditioning. Right. They go into penalty kicks. Spain's obviously the better team. They come out of that winning. So, Spain, before going into the semifinal, had 12 goals for and 5 against.
Correct.
Okay. Hey, those are some pretty impressive numbers if you ask me.
Absolutely.
They're not too far off from Italy's.
Right.
So, impressed with them. Then today's game was one hell of a matchup. But before we get to that, we're going to take a little break.
And we're back. Let's get into this game.
All right. The part I've been looking forward to all day. The Euro 2020 semifinal game. Italy against Spain.
Now, I said earlier, I ate my fingernails. Because I did. You know, there was a change of pace in this game. Italy was missing one of their key players.
They were missing Spinazzola. He was the player of the tournament up until he got hurt against Belgium.
Listen, he is so fast that his Achilles tendon ripped off. That's how fast this guy is.
He was running faster than his feet could handle.
Exactly.
Listen, I feel bad for the guy.
I do too. But you know what? He's young. They got the best doctors. He'll be back.
His problem is
6-8 months.
The only problem is, so they're looking at a 6-month recovery timeline for him. Problem is, he's been injured so many times before. So, and I think he's around 27, 28. So it's getting to the point for Spinazzola where this was a major tournament for him to make a lasting impression and get the bag.
Well, I think he made a lasting impression because from what I understand, there are teams calling from everywhere for him.
But now we got to see how he comes back from that injury.
I think he'll be okay. You know, he, like I said.
Obviously, Italy and Spain is never an easy match. And there's always bad blood between them.
We can go as far as 1994 in the World Cup. I have the pictures from it. That was a rough game.
I believe it. That game I actually haven't ever seen. But even if we just go into recent memory, okay? You go back to 2012 Euro Cup, okay? When we had to play them in the final. They beat us. Spain, I believe, became the first time back-to-back Euro Cup champion because of that game.
Right.
All right? Then we go to the 2016 Euro Cup. We want our revenge now. We ended up beating them. We play each other in World Cup qualifiers. And, you know, we tie one. Spain beats us. And it's just... Italy-Spain is never one of those games. Like, historically, you look at Italy-Germany, and for whatever reason, Italy always has Germany's number for the most part.
Right.
Like, Italy tends to win that match. With Italy-Spain, we don't. So that's what makes it a scary game. They're just a good team.
They are. They are a really good team. They play Italy very physical. It's like they go on the field, and they have a point to prove. Like, they have a chip on their shoulder, you know, because it's Italy. Italy's supposed to be the best in the world all the time.
Well, that leads to an interesting point. So, obviously, Italy were not even considered to be favorites in this tournament, right?
Which is crazy.
But going into today's game...
Did I mention that Italy had 32 wins in a row leading up to this game? Not favored.
No. But today, Italy was heavily favored. So Spain took that personally. They wanted to show that they could compete.
I don't know why they were heavily favored. You know, forget the wins, okay? Without Spinazzola, it's an evenly matched team.
Listen, I love Spinazzola, but this team, it's plug and play, okay? Do we remember that Florenzi got hurt the first game against Turkey and in steps Di Lorenzo, and Di Lorenzo has been having another phenomenal tournament?
Absolutely. So, it's that motto that Belichick uses, next guy up.
Next guy up. That's it. So for me, I wasn't worried about missing Spinazzola. This game, and everybody called me crazy for saying it, this game was the one game that scared me the most because I felt that Spain could match up against us better than any of the other teams we've played. Okay?
And you proved yourself correct.
I did, but I didn't want to prove myself correct. Right. I would have much rathered an easy win, but...
It's never an easy win against Spain.
No, I just felt like Spain's team was young enough, had the endurance, okay? And their midfield. I like Spain's midfield because of their ability to be able to move up and down the field and create, which is what Italy's midfield does.
Right.
Spain does it better, though. Okay? In my opinion, Spain does it better, and we saw that today during the game.
Right. I mean, listen, I'll give you a quick rundown, right? We'll talk about Spain doing it better than Italy.
All right, let's hear it. Because I know possession-wise, we got decimated today.
65% versus 35%.
Okay.
Spain favorite.
Okay.
Okay? Total attempts on goal. Spain had 16, Italy had 7.
And this is just to clarify, this is at the end of regular time.
Regular time.
Okay.
And there was actually only 4 from both teams that were actually on target. They had 67 attempts of attack versus Italy's 22.
Yeah.
They had 6 corner kicks.
Hold up. Before you continue, we got lucky. I was having this conversation with my cousin Mike today. He goes, Spain wasn't that dangerous. I go, Spain wasn't that dangerous. I said, Spain had a total of like 18 shots, okay? I said, those are all dangerous opportunities. We just got lucky that Spain couldn't finish them.
Exactly.
That's what it came down to. But Spain created better than Italy did today.
Yeah. They had 853 passes.
Completed. Yeah.
Okay.
Compared to Italy, how many did Italy have completed?
306.
Yeah. I mean, listen.
They had 934 attempts on passes.
Italy had how many?
404.
I'm telling you, this is what usually Italy does to other teams.
Right.
Spain did it to us today.
Right.
They played our game better than we do.
Right.
So if we look at the lineups, for example, today's starting lineup was Unai Simón in goal for Spain, okay? You had Jordi Alba, Laporte, Garcia, and Azpilicueta on defense. Pedri, Busquets, and Koke in the midfield. And then you had Torres, Oyarzabal and Olmo up top, okay? They're still playing a 4-3-3 the way Italy plays. Did you notice one thing that Spain did today that they don't usually do?
Enlighten me.
Is Olmo a striker?
You're right.
Olmo is not a striker. So how did they play? They played a false nine.
Right.
Which basically, with Olmo dropping back, okay, playing that false nine position, it screwed Italy up.
It did. You know, I'd like to go back and watch this game again and count how many times he touched the ball. Because if I can remember correctly, his name was said over and over and over and over again.
Olmo was all over the field.
Everywhere.
He was also the reason one of the reasons Spain ended up scoring. But we'll get into that shortly. Now let's take a look at Italy's lineup, okay? Donnarumma in goal. Di Lorenzo, Bonucci, Chiellini, and Emerson on defense.
Emerson was replacing Spinazzola.
Barella, Jorginho, Verratti in the midfield. Then you have Chiesa, Immobile, and Insigne in attack. Italy also playing with a 4-3-3, okay? If you look at lineup to lineup, Italy has the experience. They have the strength, okay? I would even argue to say they have the better skill, talent.
I think so, hands down.
But this goes back to what we were saying before. Spain has a young, hungry team who is fit. And they did exactly what they were supposed to against Italy to make their life complete hell.
And they did.
They did. It was, for me, a phenomenal game to see. So the game started off within like the first 5 minutes. We had that opportunity from Barella. I mean, he was offsides, but he hit the one he hit the post.
Brought
the ball outside, boom, shot it over, hit the post, dicked out. Ended up being offsides, is what it is. But right off the bat, we got started onto a hot pace with this game.
Then we had the pass from Insigne to Emerson, the first overlapping pass that Spinazzola normally makes.
Right. Well, I mean, that was in the 21st minute. So think about it.
Yeah.
From the first to the 21st, there's a little lapse in there until we got our next opportunity created with it, which isn't the Italy we've come to expect.
Right,
because Italy we've come to expect, they're possessing the entire time. They're creating the opportunities. Yeah, the ball doesn't go in, but at least we're making opportunities. Today wasn't the case.
Because I'm going to go back to Spinazzola. I know you don't like the fact that I keep on mentioning his name. He's not the best player on the field, but because he's the fastest player on the field, I think that they had to keep up to his pace, and that's why it was such a faster pace prior to today.
Look, it's not that I don't like Spinazzola. I think Spinazzola had a phenomenal tournament. But in the grand scheme of things, for me, Emerson, once he got into rhythm today, was doing the same things that Spinazzola does.
Right, but he's not as fast as Spinazzola.
I don't know, man. There was a couple of runs today where Emerson looked just as fast as Spinazzola did. I'd be curious to see what they timed some of his sprints at, because Emerson was flying on the field today at certain points. More and so in the second half than in the first. But you also got to understand, Emerson just got thrown into today's starting lineup. Before that, when did he play?
He needed a solid 45 minutes to get used to the flow.
Right, but even in the first half, like that 21st minute opportunity that we were just talking about, where Immobile, you know, Emerson plays the ball across.
He took four touches.
Right.
Four touches.
Because he couldn't settle it down his first. Right. So for anybody that didn't get a chance to see the game, basically what ended up happening is Italy's attacking on Spain's side of the field, right? Insigne brings the ball up, gets an opportunity, passes it to Emerson outside the box.
Right.
Emerson quickly plays it across to Immobile, who was in the box. When I tell you Immobile is a chooch, okay? I've hated this guy this entire tournament. That's how awful he's been playing, in my opinion.
Mind you, this guy that we're talking about has the most goals scored in Serie A, or at least top three.
Yeah, I mean, last year, I don't know if he had that great of a season. I remember the season prior, he was a capocannoniere or in the running for it. Look, the guy can score in Serie A. That's not my issue. But a lot of his goals also come from penalty kicks on the spot. Here's my problem. Unai today, for whatever reason, ran all the way out, okay? So when that ball
out all game long.
Yes, but when that ball was played from Emerson to Immobile,
first touch,
that should have just been a flick onto the net. There was nobody in goal. The keeper was all the way out to the side, almost guarding Emerson, it seemed like. The fact that he couldn't even settle that ball and he took four touches and lost it, get off the field.
But
you're hurting us more than you're helping us.
What did Mancini do? He was the first one to get subbed out.
Right. Dude, he shouldn't have even started. Start that game. with Belotti playing.
Yeah.
Don't start it with Immobile.
But I think that's part of the game plan, right? You notice that Belotti comes in usually the last 15 minutes of the game.
But why? Because Belotti also helps out more defensively.
Right.
You'll see it on corners or when the other teams are attacking. Belotti's always in the box. And for a guy that's not that tall, he's getting to the ball and knocking it out of there with his head a bunch of the times too. So you can't not appreciate what Belotti does for Italy, especially to help close out games.
Right.
But listen, Mancini had to have an idea of how today was going to go. Belotti should have started. It would have helped us more against Spain, in my opinion, than Immobile ever.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have been a lot different. We probably wouldn't have went into penalty shots. But you know, as a coach and myself, we have a game plan.
And you 99%
of the time, we're sticking to it.
You stick to it,
unless there's some crazy situation that we have to change it up last minute.
Right. So, that's how the game started. Round 25th minute. Donnarumma had a nice save on Olmo.
Oh, beautiful save.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, same thing. Italy, now this may have to do with Spinazzola not being there. I'll give you that. They got attacked on the right side a lot, where Emerson is now playing.
Yeah, they exploited it.
So, the ball's getting played on that side a lot, and this ball just keeps up ending up in the box. And it goes by Italy's defenders, Bonucci and Chiellini, a bunch of the times. And you find the Spain striker, midfielder, whoever it may be. In this case, it was Olmo playing that false nine position. He was there. He got the shot. Donnarumma made the save. They were too fast for us. It's like we couldn't catch them.
Right.
That's what it seemed like at one point in today's game.
No, let's talk about Donnarumma real quick. Now, Chiellini, he's tall.
Donnarumma's a mountain.
He is like a foot taller than him. This kid.
He's not a foot taller.
No, I know.
He's a
few
inches.
I'm exaggerating.
He's a few inches. Relax.
He is enormous.
He's huge. He's huge in that goal.
And to be as agile and as fast, to be a big guy and be that agile, it's pretty.
You want to know the scariest part of it all? The kid's only 23, 24.
22.
Still 22?
20. He's a baby.
Wow.
I'm old enough to be the kid's dad.
Think
right?
about it. We have at least 10 more years of Donnarumma on this national team.
Yeah.
10 more years
at least. If we're lucky, how long did Buffon play for?
Up until he was 40. So,
yeah.
Look, Donnarumma, world class. I hate to see him leave the Serie A and AC Milan, but he wanted to get paid, and rightfully so. Yeah, this guy
Guess what? He'll be back.
Maybe.
He'll be back.
Maybe. This guy's the best goalkeeper in the world. He deserves to get paid.
Hands down. But so. I told you, as we digress, I hope his brother, who's the backup for AC
Get
Milan,
out of here.
Has a Cinderella story next season.
Let me know when you wake up.
While I'm wearing my AC
Let me
Milan
know when you wake up.
Right,
Antonio Donnarumma can't even catch the ball bags that are thrown at him.
He's catching something because he's sitting on the bench getting paid. So
yeah, you know what he's catching? He's catching his brother saying, I'll only come play for you if my brother signs with you as well.
Hey, whatever.
So now at PSG, Antonio Donnarumma's a little bit older. He's like, you know what? Let me go to PSG on my own. You stay here at Milan as the third, fourth goalkeeper. Maybe they'll make him a coach one day, but... Were you watching the Coppa Italia game against Inter where Antonio Donnarumma had a play? This was like 3-4 years back.
No.
Man, when I tell you, I was rooting for the kid because like you, I like an underdog story.
Yeah.
But I was shitting bricks for AC Milan. Crapping bricks, I'm sorry. For AC Milan because this guy just looked so out of place. And what happened was he wasn't even supposed to start. The backup goalkeeper at the time, I forget his name, he ended up getting hurt in warm-ups. So they had to throw Antonio Donnarumma in there because Gigio was supposed to get a rest day. It was his day off.
Right.
Dude, I mean, granted, AC Milan won that game. But it just looked so goofy almost.
Right.
It just looked like he shouldn't be there.
Right.
I'll give him credit, though. He played his heart out that game. But anyway, we digressed again.
Let's go back.
So we were talking about 26th minute. Olmo took a shot. Donnarumma made the save. Same thing. Ball played across through the box. We saw a lot of that today.
Yeah.
I mean, they just exploited us at one point on both sides, too. Very back and forth at one point during that first half. Spain, obviously, the better team, in my opinion. But we didn't really get another major opportunity until, the 45th minute? Insigne played that ball. They got the ball up. Insigne played that ball to the left side of the box for Emerson. And Emerson came in and took a shot.
Yeah.
I mean... That was the last thing I remember. And see, this is why I get mad when you talk about Spinazzola being the difference maker. Emerson did the same thing Spinazzola does, today at least. So he made the overlapping runs. He allowed Insigne to cut inside. It's just, it didn't go the way that it was supposed to for him. So we end the first half 0-0.
Right.
Did the sign of the cross, sang an Ave Maria. I was happy that we got out of there 0-0 at the end of the first half.
I think that's at the point where I was texting you complaining about the referees.
I wasn't too upset with the referees in the first half. I feel like they were pretty fair all around. The second half was a little bit different, but we'll get into that in a little bit. So right away, 52nd minute, Busquets has a shot. He misses.
Yep.
All right.
I think that went just inches to the right of the post.
I believe so. So we're not even 10 minutes into the first half, and Spain is already proving to be a problem.
Right.
But literally a couple seconds later, Italy moves the ball up, and Chiesa gets a nice opportunity, but he misses as well. That was the one that they played him outside the box. He took it inside the box, made right. the shot. Keeper dove, made the save. Beautiful yep. action play, but obviously the keeper was there. The shot just wasn't good enough. Goes back and forth, back and forth. 60th minute.
60th minute.
Bo, 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 bo. Italy gets the goal.
Italy gets the goal, right? But here's where a lot of people don't realize. Maybe you realize it.
Where did the play start? Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, exactly.
Tell them, man. Where did the play start?
Goalkeeper, Donnarumma.
Right.
It took 13 seconds yep. from him seeing the field, reacting as fast as he did, releasing the ball. Now, yep. The whole game, they used him as the 12th man on the field.
They did.
They even the goal kicks.
Well, technically, it was the 11th.
That's what I meant. Long day. Long day. They used him as the 11th man, even on goal kicks.
Listen, Donnarumma, they're not afraid to let him play with the ball at his feet.
No.
That's what is really amazing about the game.
He receives this ball. He looks up. As soon as he looked up, you can see.
Well, he didn't receive it. It was on a save.
Right. So he saved it, receives it,
right.
looks up. And if you go back and watch, you can see his eyes look. He makes the connection. They play that ball up. And
well, he finds, I believe it was he found Insigne on the outside.
Yes.
Found Insigne at the outside. Spain just had their opportunity, so they got caught behind.
Yeah.
So Insigne takes that ball up. This is where I will not be mad at Immobile, because he made the right run and the effort was there. And the fact that he runs like a chicken with his head cut off allowed this play to happen. But so Insigne takes the ball up. Immobile is making that vertical run across, yeah. okay? He's making that vertical run up by past Insigne. Insigne plays that ball into space for Immobile to run onto, but the defender catches up with Immobile. And listen, if you watch it, Immobile was running full speed.
Yeah.
Defender runs up. He goes to clear the ball, but because he's Immobile, such a big dude,
yeah.
the defender wasn't able to get everything on it, and the ball ended up bouncing around. And who does it end up bouncing in front of?
The church.
Federico Chiesa, okay? And this was my favorite part of the game, because what did Chiesa end up doing? He shot Ala Insigne, okay? That curled ball into the far post, and it just beautifully sank right in. Yeah. It was a beautiful goal. So, I mean, listen, Insigne released an interview last week. They were interviewed him after the Belgium game. And they're like, oh, you know, it's your signature shot. Do you ever try anything different? And he goes, you know, coach tells me to take my shot earlier or take a different type of shot. He goes, but this works, so why not?
Right.
He goes, I can't help it. I can't resist it. Like, right. that's my shot. And it proved today that even though it wasn't Insigne the one taking it, that shot worked again. The curler.
Beautiful. The way it's executed. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, but I mean, I was ecstatic when that went in. You know, I'm watching the game with my father, and I told you before, I didn't really celebrate Chiesa's goal because I was still so nervous, even right. though it was 1-0. I right. was so nervous about this game. But to see my father jumping for joy, cheering, like, you know, we got this goal. It was just, it's that passion of the Italian fans yeah. when we're winning, when we're scoring. It was beautiful. You know, we ended up doing that in the 60th. Then Spain proves to be lethal again. Not even 5 minutes after we scored, they had that beautiful play. They brought the ball. They were running up the field onto the left side of the box.
They caught us on a counterattack.
Oh, yeah. And that was the thing. Like I was saying earlier, too. that speed, that vision that they have. They were catching us like that all day.
Yes.
So, but you know, they brought the ball up the field. They were on the left side of a box. Beautiful curler going back post. Oyarzabal, or however we pronounce his name, I'm probably butchering it. He missed the ball with his head by inches. Literal inches. Maybe even centimeters. That's how close it was. But that was a perfect opportunity for it to be 1-1 right there. The next 15 minutes, maybe, you would say, what, back and forth?
Back and forth.
I mean, Spain had a few more opportunities,
yeah,
I believe.
There were nothing that was, you know, scary or on target.
Right. So it was a... I almost believed at that point, up until the 80th minute, that Italy had this.
Yeah,
that's it.
Me too.
We weren't going overtime.
Me too.
80th minute comes around.
Morata.
I hate him.
So does everybody in Spain.
Yeah. Poor kid's getting death threats from Spain fans because of how he's been playing, which, let's just settle this right now. At the end of the day, we all love this game, but this is just a game.
Exactly.
Nobody's life should be threatened over how they play for their national team.
Right.
But so 80th minute, Morata scores, which is probably the worst thing that could have happened because I hate him. He plays for Juve, okay? I really thought Bonucci and Chiellini scrimmaging against him in practice every day at Juve would not allow that to happen.
Right.
But he scored, and it was actually very quick the way it happened. And this goes back to what I was saying about Spain's midfield and their quickness.
It was quick, but, you know, the pass was made, and it was right down in between Bonucci and Chiellini. It was, they exploited a 10-foot gap.
But the whole build-up to the play, so this is what happened. Defender, outside back, I believe it was the outside left back, has the ball, right? Plays it to Morata, who's in the middle. Jorginho was caught out.
Right.
And I mean way out.
Yep.
Which left that entire middle wide open. Morata takes the ball, immediately starts gunning it downfield. Who's there next to him ready to receive a pass? Olmo, the guy that's been running like a chicken with his head cut off for the entire game. So it was a literally a quick 1-2. Morata gives it to Olmo. He gets the defense to take one step to commit towards him, and he plays that ball through to Morata, still continuing his run. The defense was frozen.
Yeah.
It was Morata one-on-one with the goal, and even Donnarumma. You know, Morata, first of all, slotted that ball beautifully into the back of the net.
And he had me guessing that he was going to the left, too, when he put that in.
Right. I mean, listen, Donnarumma jumped early, but Morata just played that to perfection. But it changed the course of the game.
It did.
Now, we suffered.
Right.
There was no more just playing hardball.
Well, up to the 80th minute, I was canceling all plans for Sunday. That happened, and I started remaking plans.
Right.
Sunday.
It's like, what are we doing now? Hold up. I don't think this is going to happen anymore. I mean, I don't remember us getting many other opportunities, but I do have to talk about one thing before that goal got scored. We're talking about Spinazzola and Emerson, right? I didn't notice a big drop-off there. There's one change that Mancini made that really pissed me off, and it was when he took out Emerson for Toloi and moved Di Lorenzo to the left.
Yeah, there was all sorts of confusion that was happening right there.
But Di Lorenzo played on the right all game, okay? If it's working, why change it? Put Toloi on the left if you have to.
At that point, too, he moved Insigne to the middle, right?
Insigne was floating around. He was still on the wing, but he was in the middle as well.
Yeah.
He definitely changed his position, but I saw Insigne in both. I saw him on the flank, and I saw him on in the middle. You switch Di Lorenzo, you put Toloi there, and you could tell that Toloi was just getting beaten every time. You know,
yeah.
He couldn't handle it at that
point.
The only other option we could have done is maybe thrown Cristante in at left back. I know he has some experience there from playing with Roma, but it's just...
I don't know why.
Why make that change? I've always agreed with every change Mancini's made. I don't know if I agree with that one.
They should have just left him in. He was he had just started to get that momentum going.
But Emerson needed to come out. I'm more mad that you made Di Lorenzo change sides.
Right.
I'm okay with Emerson coming out. He was tired, man. By the time he got subbed out, I believe it was like the 75th minute, you could tell the guy was exhausted. And rightfully so.
Right.
He hasn't played all tournament. He just played 75 minutes.
Right.
But yeah, that move was confusing. I'm glad it worked out in the end, but...
Just barely.
Regular time ends, 0-0, 1-1. For the third consecutive time, Spain goes into overtime.
Right. At this point, I thought they were just going to break down. You know, legs are going to fall off, thinking that they're exhausted. But I guess, you know, being 22, 23, 24,
I mean, they had Pedri on the team. I don't even think he got subbed out. Pedri's only 18 years old. But besides Busquets and who was the other one? I think Azpilicueta and Garcia? No, Koke. So Busquets, Koke, and Azpilicueta. Everybody else is under 25.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's why in overtime they scare me. Because like we were saying, just their endurance, their fitness. Right. But their experience also kills them a little bit.
Absolutely. So yes, you might have all the endurance in the world.
But they lack experience.
The experience where Italy has the experience to play a certain way in the extra time.
Right, because these guys are all veterans on Italy's side. So yeah, even though they've never won a World Cup, or they're just, those extra years they have on them have taught them how to handle different situations.
So they also,
games.
So these guys also know who they have as their goalkeeper, right? They're probably just as tired as Spain. But they know that if they sit back and maybe try to get a counterattack going here or there and try to put one in. Other than that, I think they were banking on going to PKs. That's the kind of confidence they have in Donnarumma.
You mean Italy?
Yes.
Had that confidence?
Yes.
Maybe. It could be. I really don't know. From what it seemed like to me, you're right. The approach was just defend the hell out of this. But then also, the second half of overtime didn't seem like that. So it's a toss-up. I think Italy did want to win the game before going to PKs.
I mean, I think every team wants to try to win before going to PKs.
Because Mancini said at the end, he goes, even though we won, he goes, PKs are 50-50. He goes, you never know who's going to win them. But even, so the first half of overtime, I would give that one to Spain. I would say Spain dominated the first half of overtime,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
Second half of overtime, I crap myself again immediately as we started. We do one, two, three, four passes, and we lost the ball already.
Right.
So it was just like, for me, it seemed like it was destined for Spain to win this game, no matter what we tried.
Right.
Then enter Federico Bernardeschi, who I never liked him. I could tell you 1,000 other people who complain about him at Juventus and why he even made the national team.
Right.
But he was a little bit of a difference maker in the second half because he provided those fresh legs and that speed to stretch us up top.
Yeah.
So in the second half of overtime, yeah, we didn't score one, but we created a little bit more opportunities. And he also allowed us to, I don't want to say have a different style of play, but it was just, how can I put it best? We were able to move differently with him on there because it seemed like everybody else had just run out of stamina.
Right,
because
they can just send the ball up and this kid's got fresh legs and he's going to go chase it down.
Also, we forgot about one thing.
What's that?
We forgot to mention the no call on Chiellini in regular time. So Chiellini fell in the box and the ball hit his hand.
Now,
do you agree with that call or disagree?
Yes, because it's a new rule. It's the way he fell. It wasn't done on purpose. There was no intention for the handball.
Correct.
So it's a no call. And I thought it was a great call because it could have changed the whole thing. Italy would have lost. Penalty shot. Even the kid said it today while he was commentating. It's one of those calls that they need to start getting better worldwide on.
Right.
You know?
And this is where I appreciate the referee. He recognized that. The game's 1-1. It's about to end regular time.
Yeah.
You don't give a PK there.
No.
So
he would have caused a riot.
And this is what I was saying to you earlier. You didn't like the referee. I didn't like him that much either. But when I saw him do that, I said, okay.
I did too. At that point, it was at that moment I realized the referee was doing a good job.
But not only that, man, a lot of the no calls too, and like he did it for both sides.
Yeah.
So put it into perspective for me. I was like, he's not as bad as we're making him out to be. There should have been some cards earlier on. That's the only thing I'll complain about.
There were what, three total, right? Two yellows for Italy and one for Spain?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Toloi ended up getting a yellow card. That was one of the controversial moments. Regular time, 1-1. Overtime, 1-1. We go into PKs.
Right. Now, PKs. I mentioned this before we started. I'm going to mention it now. My 10-year-old son is watching. My 13-year-old son both play soccer. But Matteo, he's watching. And he is studying these guys. And he sees that they're all grouped up. You know, they're all talking. But he notices that Mancini is making these guys laugh. They're all laughing over there. They're all joking around. Then he sees Spain, and they're all down on a knee, and it's serious. It's, you know, whatever they're talking about. And he said, Coach, he said, Dad, he goes, I noticed that the Italian coach, he's calming them down.
Right.
He's making them laugh. You did the same thing when we went to PKs. You're a good coach just like him. And I got choked up.
That's funny.
But listen, for him to notice that at 10 years old, you know, he's paying attention. He's watching. He's learning.
He's noticing. He's proud. It was the best way to, you know, take that pressure off your shoulders for a second.
Then Chiellini goes for the coin flip. Did you notice that?
Oh, that was hysterical.
Laughing, joking around, you know, nudging. What was it?
It wasn't Busquets. It was somebody else had taken over the captain's band at that point. I forget who it was.
And this kid's just standing there like a stone.
He's shooken up. He didn't know what to do.
And that, I think at that moment, right there, I was like, oh, we got this. Because they're calm. They're laughing. They're joking around. There was nothing that was going
to
beat them.
It was unbelievable to see Chiellini act like that during a coin flip. And did you see the way he confused the guy too? He's like doing like, oh no, we're going that way. And the Spain player looked confused for a second. Like, wait, what just happened? To where I think they had to flip the coin a second time. Yeah.
And then he won it again. He's like, no, we're going to take that side. We were defending this whole time over there. We're going to take this side.
It was phenomenal to see. And just even again, at the end, right before they left, Chiellini dapped him up, hugged him,
picks him up.
Right, you know. And the guy just looks shook.
Yeah, he's like, what's this guy doing?
He goes to shake the referee's hand, and Chiellini grabs him again and shakes his hand. Talk about a total mind game.
Right. Well, not only that, but I honestly thought that walking up, that the mood was better. It was, you know, they were all laughing and joking around. The pressure is not so, you know, on their chest.
So how was the pressure after Locatelli took his first shot?
Well, you know, I still felt confident.
I did too, but going first is never easy. And you can say we took out our best PK takers throughout the course of a match, right? I mean, they got tired. We needed to sub them out. But you have no Immobile. You have no Insigne. You have no Chiesa, right? Who else got taken out that could have taken one? Verratti.
Yep.
Verratti was out. Okay. So Locatelli stepped up. He was the first one to go and he missed. It is what it is. But I saw that the team didn't get down on themselves when Locatelli missed.
No. It was like, hey, whatever. You missed. Big deal.
But then my favorite part of the night, Olmo went up. He took the shot and he rocketed it.
Do you know what I call that penalty shot?
What?
Il Baggio.
No.
No, that was...
Listen, Baggio sailed right over.
This thing went to Mars. But I think... The nerves got to him.
In hindsight, Olmo's shot wasn't that bad. But here's the thing. You're going up against a mountain in Gigio Donnarumma in goal, okay? Spain already went to PKs. So you don't think that Donnarumma had a chance to study where these guys were going? Because if you notice, Donnarumma dove the right way.
Right.
Donnarumma put his hand up to where that ball should have went. This guy knew, Olmo knew, that if I want to score my shot, I have to put it a little bit higher than I usually do. He ended up rocketing it.
So when they're studying these players, they don't just study the last match. They'll have a compounded list of all their penalty shots, even when they're playing with their club teams. Because they, 9 out of 10 times, they're going
to
go
to your side.
Same way.
You're going to go to your side.
So did you notice, what's the Spanish goalkeeper's?
Unai.
Okay. You notice which way he was diving?
He was diving to his right.
Every single time?
Not every time. He switched
3 times.
Yeah.
So Mateo says, why aren't they picking, or it was Marcello, why aren't the Italian players realizing that's where he's diving? I go, if you thought about it, they've already thought about it.
Right.
So the next shot, his left.
Right, which was the only time that Unai really got split. I mean, he was pretty good. He just wasn't getting to the balls. Right. I mean, besides saving Locatelli's. I don't remember who went. I remember Belotti went next for Italy. Yes. And Belotti's was a beautiful PK. And Unai dove the right way, you know?
He just put that thing went. You know, if we were playing a video game, it would have said, you dove too late. Or too early, I should say.
Early, late. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Where Belotti put that with the power he put behind it, you're scoring that every time.
Every time.
So, beautiful shot by Belotti. So now we have Belotti made it. Spain goes. I forgot who went next, but Spain took it. They made it. Then we had Bonucci going.
Bonucci, he was right-footed.
Bonucci went to the right.
Yeah, but who's the left-footed kicker for Italy?
The left-footed one.
It was the...
Bernardeschi.
Okay.
Right?
That was, I think so. That was such a beautiful shot.
But before that, Bonucci goes up. Usually you don't see a defender taking a PK that early on.
Not always.
But it reminded me of like the 06 World Cup where Marco Materazzi, you know, would line up and take, it's just, it's one of those things. He owned it. And Bonucci's right. that guy to do it. Right. You know, I love Bonucci for that. And he ended up going to his right while Unai was diving to his right every time. So that Bonucci was the first one to catch on to that. Right. And he did a nice job with his PK. So Bonucci goes, then Spain went, they scored again. Then we were talking about Bernardeschi. So now this is a player that everybody's like, why the hell did he even get called up? Right. He's not a difference maker. Not only did it help in the second half of overtime, but his PK was beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah, the way he just ripped that across the keeper, nailed it, strength, speed, everything behind that ball, loved it. Okay? Then Morata comes up. Did you think he was going to make it? He's the goal scorer.
A part of me was hoping he made it just for all the controversy he's going through in his personal life back home. The other part of me wanted him to miss.
You know what I had flashbacks to? 2006 Trezeguet. I was like, it's always that guy that plays for Juventus that's lining up to take a PK and cracks under the pressure. And you know Gigio plays against Morata in Serie A, Milan, Juventus. He had a good idea where this guy was going.
Yeah.
When he went and missed, I celebrated. I finally celebrated. I said, this was it.
He missed or he got blocked? He got blocked.
I mean, he got saved. The ball, yeah. Donnarumma saved it. But, yeah. You know, technically he missed. That's what they counted as. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I started celebrating. I said, this is it. We got it. And then our savior, Jorginho, who I watch this guy take penalties at Napoli. And when I tell you he gave me agita, anxiety, whatever you want to call it, every time I would see him do his dumb little run-up, I'd be like, oh my God, he's going to sail this thing.
Right.
I never understood the way that he takes penalties.
I don't get it either.
Until today, though. Because Unai was diving. He was getting close to making those saves. But the way that Jorginho hop steps, he sent the keeper diving before he even touched the ball. Shot. And then he just slid it right into the back of the net. Which Spain's player, I mean, two shots earlier, before Morata, did the same exact thing.
Right.
So it was very similar to Jorginho's penalty. And Donnarumma, same thing. He just got stuck. He went the wrong way, and the player slotted it the other way. But when Jorginho scored that, I mean, this guy just won a Champions League with Chelsea. Okay? Former Napoli player, so he's near and dear to my heart. But the see the place erupt, and everybody celebrating with him, it was like, how do you not give Jorginho a Ballon d'Or this year? How do you not? He's one of the best midfielders in the world.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome for me sitting there, my two kids jumping up off the couch. I got to record it. I showed you the video.
Yeah, we'll have to post it. But man, oh man, what a mixed bag of emotions during today's game.
So we're going to the finals.
We're going to the finals.
Leads us to the next quick thing.
Tomorrow's game.
England versus Denmark. As we said before, it could be a Cinderella story for Denmark, but England's got some power players there. They got guys like Kane and Sterling.
I mean, England's team is the favorite. They're the superstars.
Yeah, but
Denmark could do it.
2020, Denmark versus England at Wembley Stadium.
Correct. 1-0 Denmark, right?
1-0 Denmark. Goal scored by Christian Eriksen, the guy that's missing.
The guy that Denmark is playing their hearts out for right now.
Literally.
It's going to be an interesting match tomorrow. We'll have to do a recap of that game as well.
We will.
So, this is the first official podcast of Sava FC. We hope you guys enjoyed, and we look forward to chatting about more soccer with you.
Have a good night. Till tomorrow.
See ya.